the death toll from the recent earthquakes in Turkey and Syria exceeds 21,000 as search and rescue operations continue. Tehran strongly condemns the latest U.S. sanctions on its petrochemical companies, saying they prove Washington's ill will and hypocrisy toward Iran. Also ahead, the Russian president says his country's economy has overcome the adverse impact of Western sanctions and is expected to show modest growth in 2023. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story: in Syria and Turkey, thousands of locals and foreigners continue the rescue operation for more survivors, despite dimming hopes 4 days after a massive quake, which is the sixth deadliest in the century. The scale of the natural disaster has swamped relief operations, already hampered by freezing temperatures. Chances of finding survivors have dimmed now that the 72-hour mark experts consider the most likely period to save lives has passed. The death toll stands at over 21,000, of which more than 17,000 is for Turkey and over 3,000 in Syria. Experts fear the number will continue to rise sharply as thousands of buildings have been flattened. Dozens of nations, including China and the United States, have pledged to help. Search teams and relief supplies have already arrived. Iran has called for more international aid for the quake-hit regions in Syria and Turkey, especially those parts of Syria that are not controlled by the government. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with the UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres. He said the situation in Syria's Idlib province is especially tragic because the government has no access to that region. Amir Abdullahian said Iran is ready to dispatch search and rescue teams to Idlib. Guterres, for his part, said the world body will do its utmost to help the quake victims, including in Syria. He added that the UN considers helping the Syrian people a totally humanitarian issue.
A devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck southeastern Turkey and northwestern Syria early on Monday. The deadly quake and a string of aftershocks have killed thousands of people in both countries and injured more. Hundreds of buildings in both Syria and Turkey have been reduced to rubbles. Rescue workers are still working in freezing temperatures to find those still trapped under debris. While Turkey has been aided by its allies and Western partners to cope with the crisis, aid is trickling to sanctions-hit Syria. Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad has highlighted Syria's need for humanitarian assistance, warning that the U.S. sanctions have worsened the circumstances as the illegal bans have prevented the delivery of everything to the country. The catastrophe of the earthquake that struck Syria is great, and what has increased its depth is the difficult circumstances that the country has been going through for the past 12 years as it's fighting terrorism and its supporters. What exacerbated the tragedy and catastrophe was the sanctions imposed by the United States and Western countries on Syria. The Syrian top diplomat further said that Damascus had appealed to the member states of the United Nations, the General Secretariat of the organization, its relevant agencies and funds, the International Committee of the Red Cross, and other humanitarian action partners from international, governmental, and non-governmental organizations to extend a helping hand and support Syria's efforts to confront the crisis.
You know, given that the war situation and economic economic, financial, unilateral, illegal, unilateral, inhumane Western sanctions imposed on Syria. At the same time, when the U.S. Is imposing, and with its Western allies, imposing almost a blockade around Syria.
Well, calls are now growing louder on Western nations to lift their sanctions on Syria in a bid to expedite rescue operations. The Syrian Red Crescent has appealed to Western countries to provide aid to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of the devastating earthquakes. Syria is also grappling with the years of foreign-backed insurgency, militancy, terrorism, which has devastated the country.
As Syria is reeling from the aftermath of the deadly earthquakes, the United States is working with partners to provide earthquake relief in Syria, but will stand firm against working with Syria's legitimate government headed by President Bashar al-Assad. The United States has refused normalization of relations with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad or any direct reconstruction aid.
Lots of the airplane, cargo airplane, refused to land on Syrian airports because of the American and European sanctions. So even those countries who want to send humanitarian assistance, they cannot use the airplane cargo because of the sanctions.
Washington listed Syria as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1979, but since the beginning of the imposed war on Syria in 2011, the United States and its Western allies have imposed a number of economic sanctions and restrictions on Syria. U.S. sanctions intensified with the passing of the CESAR Act in 2019, which was signed by former President Donald Trump. The sanctions have severely affected the Syrian economy, especially its construction, finance and energy sectors, and complicated the reconstruction effort.
The hurdles we have, if I talk about the area under government control, we don't have an access problem in terms of authorizations, but we have an access problem in terms of the capacity of the infrastructure to authorize that, to enable us to do it. I mean, this means we might have to repair a few roads here and there. And we're not the only one. The government is also working on that. But we are in a situation where it was already difficult to do that before. And now we are in a situation where we don't have any other option than doing it.
Syria has been in the throes of foreign-backed militancy since March 2011. While the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group was crushed by the Syrian government, militant outfits continue to hold sway in some parts of the country under the patronage of Western powers. The United States has also established several military bases in northern Syria in a bid to help the terrorists there. Meanwhile, Iran has sent several batches of humanitarian aid to Syria to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of the devastating earthquakes. The latest batch of aid included food, blankets and carpets. Iran will send more humanitarian supplies to Syria in the coming days. Iran has urged the international community to put pressure on the US to lift its cruel sanctions on Syria to facilitate aid deliveries. The Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement has also sent convoys of humanitarian aid to earthquake-affected areas in Syria.
Tunisian President Kais Saied has decided to restore full diplomatic ties with Syria after a decade of tense relations. The announcement was made in a statement by Saied's office. The presidency said relations with Syria will be upgraded to ambassador level. Tunis cut off diplomatic relations with Damascus after foreign-backed militancy started in Syria in 2011. Later, in 2017, Tunisia reinstituted a limited diplomatic mission to Syria. Many Arab countries have indicated their decision to restore ties with Syria after the country's forces effectively defeated foreign-backed militants and terrorists. Egypt, Jordan, Oman, and the United Arab Emirates have already taken steps to mend fences with Damascus. Iran's ambassador to Moscow says Tehran will take part in trilateral talks on the settlement of differences between Damascus and Ankara. Kazem Jalali made the remark while talking to Russian media in Moscow. He hoped that Iran's participation in the talks among Syria, Turkey, and Russia would take place before the upcoming foreign ministerial meeting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan recently said the foreign ministers of Syria, Turkey, and Russia will meet to address existing differences between Damascus and Ankara. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has also called Iran's participation in the talks reasonable. And Iran has strongly condemned new U.S. sanctions on a number of petrochemical companies, saying President Joe Biden continues the failed policy of his predecessor. The foreign ministry spokesman said the U.S. recourse to illegal and unilateral sanctions proves legitimacy of Tehran's position and Washington's ill will and hypocrisy towards Iran. Nasser Kanani added that the imposition of unilateral coercive measures contravenes the accepted norms and principles of international law. He said Iran reserves the right to take all necessary measures to counter U.S. sanctions. Earlier on Thursday, the U.S. Treasury Department said it had imposed sanctions on six Iran-based petrochemical manufacturers and their subsidiaries, as well as three firms in Malaysia and Singapore. The Treasury accused those companies of helping Iran sell its petrochemicals and petroleum to Asian buyers. Iran says despite U.S. sanctions, the country's oil exports hit new highs in the last 2 months of 2022. Iranian and Russian TV channels are set to boost bilateral cooperation in a meeting with the head of the IRIB World Service. A delegation of Russian television executives discussed practical measures to strengthen partnership. Gisu Misha Ahmadi has the details.
In line with a fourth meeting of Iran and Russia media cooperation, a delegation of Russian television executives, as well as TV and radio station managers, led by the Russian Deputy Minister of Digital Affairs, visited the IRIB World Service's TV and radio stations. That included the Spanish channel Hispan TV and the English news network Press TV, a chance for the Russian delegation to observe the technical developments up close.
Both the Russian and the Iranian side have reached a point where they are ready for practical steps after holding several rounds of meetings and signing cooperation agreements. We have laid the groundwork, and our audience will soon be enjoying our joint TV and radio productions.
The visit also provided the opportunity to discuss potential areas of cooperation.
We can cooperate in exchange of content. It's movies, TV series, it's cartoons and documentaries. There is a very broad field.
The details were carefully discussed in order to break down the steps and see how the two sides can take cooperation to the next level. First and foremost, representatives were appointed from both sides to be directly in touch and to be in charge of joint media productions from now on.
Iran and Russia are both under pressure and sanctions by Western countries, so this meeting and the one we had 2 days ago are of strategic importance. There is great potential, and I believe that we can immediately begin joint radio production.
But the highlight of this meeting was how to neutralize Western sanctions, particularly in the field of media, with the Iranian side sharing its valuable experiences in this regard.
ببینید ما شاهد تغییراتی در نظم جهان هستیم.
We are witnessing a new world order, and under these circumstances, regional and international powers such as Russia, Iran, and China will be growing closer and develop stronger alliances. Russians are experiencing sanctions aimed at isolating them since the war in Ukraine has begun. We can share years of experience with them in this regard. Our media cooperation not only allows unheard voices to be heard, but it will also reshape public opinion.
Both sides agree that the groundwork has prepared and joint production can start in 2023, marking the beginning of a strategic alliance in a multipolar world where all voices can be heard. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Turning elsewhere now, the Russian president says his country's economy has overcome the adverse impact of Western sanctions that were imposed on Moscow over the war in Ukraine.
I think that for many of those who were and are trying to create problems, it was unexpected how effectively we withstood the threats created for us in economy and in particular industries. As it became evident, the financial system is working. All of the production industries are working. All services, they work at pace without failures.
Vladimir Putin said that despite attempts to undermine certain Russian industries, the country's economy is expected to show modest growth in 2023. He added that international institutes have to acknowledge that Moscow has successfully coped with the shocks of the sanctions. After the war began in Ukraine, Russia was slapped with a slew of sanctions by Kiev's allies. The sanctions cut Russian banks from the SWIFT financial network, curbed the country's access to technology, and restricted its oil exports. Moscow says its economy is resilient, and the sanctions have boomeranged against the West by driving up inflation and energy prices. The Chilean government has declared a nighttime curfew in south-central regions where wildfires have raged for over a week now. The curfew will be enforced from midnight to 5 a.m. local time on Friday. It will cover 28 municipalities in three regions hit worst by forest fires. Officials say the move is aimed at preventing theft and looting in the affected regions. Some 5,600 firefighters are currently battling 90 priority fires out of 323 still active. The wildfires have so far scorched 300,000 hectares of forest and destroyed 1,200 houses, leaving thousands of people homeless. They have left at least 24 people dead and over 2,000 injured. About 20 people have been arrested on suspicion of having set some of the fires.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., the Koch fundraising network has signaled a turn against Donald Trump in 2024. The return of one of the biggest spenders in American politics to the presidential primary field posed a direct challenge to the former president Donald Trump's comeback bid. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Washington Post has covered this story and tells us more. The network of donors and activist groups led by conservative billionaire Charles Koch will oppose Donald Trump for the 2024 Republican nomination, mounting a direct challenge to the former president's campaign to win back the White House. The best thing for the country would be to have a president in 2025 who represents a new chapter, Emily Seidel, chief executive of the network's flagship group, Americans for Prosperity, wrote in a memo released publicly on Sunday, 5th of February. The three-page missive repeatedly suggests that Americans for Prosperity is taking on the responsibility of stopping Donald Trump, with Emily Seidel writing, "Lots of people are frustrated, but very few people are in a position to do something about it. Americans for Prosperity is. Now is the time to rise to the occasion." The move marks the most notable example to date of an overt and coordinated effort from within conservative circles to stop Donald Trump from winning the GOP nomination for a third straight presidential election. Some Republicans have grown increasingly frustrated with Trump after disappointing midterm elections in which he drew blame for elevating flawed candidates and polarizing ideas. But absent a consolidated effort to stop Donald Trump, many critics fear he will be able to exploit GOP divisions and chart a course to the nomination as he did in 2016. While the memo didn't name a spending target, Americans for Prosperity's affiliated Super PAC spent more than $69 million in the 2022 cycle, according to the Federal Election Commission disclosures. The Koch network joins the Club for Growth, another of the largest outside spenders and several of the party's biggest individual donors, such as finance billionaires Kenneth Griffin and Stephen Schwarzman, in signaling their opposition to Donald Trump's current campaign. Others are holding back for now. The salvo from one of the biggest spenders in American politics marks a reversal after sitting out the past two presidential primaries. The Koch network has stayed on the sidelines since 2015, when it identified five approved presidential candidates, all of whom fell to Trump. To avoid a repeat of that outcome, the network plans to endorse a single candidate by the end of this summer, according to a person familiar with the discussions, who spoke on condition of anonymity because the talks were confidential. Americans for Prosperity Action is prepared to support a candidate in the Republican presidential primary who can lead our country forward and who can win, Emily Seidel wrote in the memo. How Americans for Prosperity follows through on the memo's dramatic aims remains to be seen. The organization has in the past rolled out ambitious plans to influence primaries that did not eventually measure up. In the years since the Koch network stepped back from presidential primaries, many of its top donors drifted away towards other outfits or their own causes, and many of its most prominent strategists and operatives, such as Mark Short, Tim Phillips, and Mike Roman, moved on to other jobs. Koch has also invested heavily in policy work and community-based organizations outside of direct spending on elections. The decision by the powerful network to challenge Donald Trump marks an escalation of a long simmering feud over the GOP's core policy commitments. Trump's brand of economic nationalism has clashed with the free trade inclinations of the Koch network. The globalist Koch brothers, who have become a total joke in real Republican circles, are against strong borders and powerful trade, Donald Trump wrote on Twitter back in 2018, referring to Charles Koch and his brother David, who died in 2019. Donald Trump and the Koch network have been more aligned on opposing foreign interventions and reducing non-violent criminal sentences. The Industrialist Brothers assembled an influential network of groups that have sought to have a major impact in the political process. Sunday's memo expressed frustration with the direction of American politics in the Trump era. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered this story and tells us more. The powerful political network led by conservative billionaire Charles Koch waded into the GOP's 2024 presidential primary on Sunday, 5th of February 2023, saying the party needs to turn the page on the past in an apparent turn against former President Donald Trump. The Koch network said it's planning to put its deep-pocketed support behind the Republican candidate in the presidential primary, which it has not done in the past. And the group indicated that candidate will not be Donald Trump, according to a new memo from Emily Seidel, the chief executive officer of the Koch advocacy group Americans for Prosperity. Our country must move past the current political situation. We've got to turn the page on the past several years, said Emily Seidel, who is also a senior advisor to the group's political wing, Americans for Prosperity Action. The letter makes no mention of Donald Trump, who has already launched his campaign for the GOP's presidential nomination next year. And CNN reported that Americans for Prosperity Action has confirmed it won't back the former president. The Koch network is also widely influential in the GOP fundraising space, meaning other major donors would follow its lead in moving away from Donald Trump. Emily Seidel wrote, "The hard truth about the present political landscape is that the Republican Party is nominating bad candidates who are getting rejected by the American people, and the Democratic Party increasingly sees this as a political opportunity to push more extreme policies. To write a new chapter of our country, we need to turn the page on the past. So the best thing for the country would be to have a president in 2025 who represents a new chapter. The American people have shown that they're ready to move on, and so Americans for Prosperity will help them do that," Seidel wrote. No other high-profile Republican has yet entered the ring with Donald Trump for the 2024 cycle, though former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley is expected to announce soon and become the second major name in the running for the Republican nomination. On the Democratic side, President Biden hasn't officially announced he'll run for another White House term, but has said he intends to try for four more years and is widely expected to seek re-election in 2024. Since Democrats appear to have already chosen their path for the 2024 presidential election, Americans for Prosperity Action said it seems no room to have a positive impact there, but is prepared to deploy its enormous fundraising apparatus in the Republican race. Americans for Prosperity Action is prepared to support a candidate in the Republican presidential primary who can lead our country forward and who can win, Emily Seidel wrote.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome to another episode of your own program. This is Muslim Lady. You are hearing us from IRIB English Radio. I am very much happy to be here at your service. This is Asma, and once more I have the pleasure to be with Sister Zainab to help us with today's topic. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you so much, sister.
Thank you for being here. It's been quite a very fruitful series of sessions that we're having together. We're learning a lot from the queen of all the ladies, Lady Fatima Zahra, salamullah alayha, how she treated her parents. And then after she grows up and then she comes to the age of marriage, how she treated her husband. And we actually went through some specific detail of the relationship between couples according to her life, how she's been modest, she's been not demanding so much of materialistic things from her husband, knowing that her husband is not capable of affording all those, you know, materialistic needs and whatever. And also considering Allah in every step of her life, even in her relationship with her husband, and being the daughter of the Prophet, still she's doing all the chores of home and she's not sad with that. She's supporting her husband and she's being this mental support that we're just talking about in this modern life. And then do we still have some more about her relationship with her husband?
A very small portion is remaining, that what kind of favor she had with her husband. We said almost everything that was must to be learned, you know, to take as a model from her life, to have that attitude towards our husbands. But now we have something very, very strange that she has been thinking of. Towards the end of her life, you know, she makes a list of wills and expresses her wills towards her husband. You know, you never know when it's your time and you're going.
Yeah.
Always have that list and always share it with your husband that, you know, I have not prayed these many salats. I have not kept these many fasts. Please take care of this after me. Who is actually going to look after you? Have that, you know, a connection with your husband and always discuss that with your husband. Now we have something very strange. Lady Zahra Salamu Alaiha is thinking over here. She's thinking, she's so caring, she's so loving. She's thinking of her husband after her.
Yeah, the solitude of her husband after her.
She's thinking of her children after her, you know. In one of her reels, she tells Imam Ali al-Islam that after me do marry... She mentions the name, one of her relatives, her name is Umame, and then tells him that I think she is more concerned towards my children and she's as good as me for my children.
Oh so my God, marry yeah, that's her. Very difficult.
Marry her after me. But just imagine today if we even joke...
That's with, impossible.
If we even joke with our husbands, we say to them that if I die and you got married with someone else, don't even dare to come to my grave.
Yeah, I would be alive just seeing you and then I will shut you.
Or I'll come as a, you know, I don't know, a devil and irritate you.
I'll come back as a ghost and then kill you with my own hands.
That's selfish. That's selfish. When you're gone, you're thinking about yourself. But she has always been thinking about the other person.
Still, you need to be so much evolved to
but,
say
you know,
such
not,
things.
Not just for his desires or something.
I know what you mean, yeah.
She has been thinking of her kids. The very important point when she tells him, get married after me, is that she tells him, a mama is like me for my children. Her attitude towards my children is exactly like that of me. So I am concerned about my children. See her worldview, see her nature, see her thinking, the broad view of her, you know, thinking. Now she has other lists. She tells him like, do come to my grave, do recite Quran and do other things. And then she says one of the beautiful things that I don't think any women will dare to say this to husband.
So let's put it just as a cliffhanger and then we'll be back after the break.
The
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So this is Muslim Lady. You are listening to our today's discussion, which is all about the lifestyle of Lady Fatimatu Zahra. Actually, we've been through it for quite some sessions and some long sessions, of course, which we are learning too much from it. Just as I interrupted you before we go for the break, you were about to say something. You said that she told her husband something that no woman would dare to say.
Exactly. So when she was in her last days of life, she... tears are rolling down her cheeks, and she says to Imam Ali al-Islam that my dear cousin, she always addresses him, even in this very tough time when she's ill, when she's sick on the deathbed, and she's addressing even there with some sort of great respect, and tears are rolling down her eyes, and Imam Ali asks her for the reason, and she says to him that I never lied to you. I never cheated you.
Yeah.
I never went against you. And, you know, Imam Ali al-Islam gets so much pushed with her words and says, oh, Fatima, what are these words that you're saying? Your status is much, much higher than this. You have been the best in taqwa. You know, you have always carried out whatever is obligatory. You have always avoided whatever was supposed to get, you know, whatever we have been commanded not to do, and you have always been the best of the followers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You have been so fearful towards Allah, and you really don't know how hard it is for me to lose you at this point of time. But you know, death is something that every soul has to
how
taste.
Devoted he is to his wife, actually.
Both of them, see? Yeah, see the conversation?
It's a mutual relationship.
The conversations show, reflect so much respect, so much love, so much concern. The problem that is in today's couples is that we are self-centered.
Exactly, yeah, I do believe so.
We have been thinking about self. We are least concerned about we are in a relationship. We are in a mutual relationship. But, you know, trust is lacking. Everything is lacking. I tell the Muslim ladies out there, do you really dare to tell your husband, I never lied to you, I never cheated you, I never went against you? You know,
wow.
They have been some of our
That's a nice question.
Seriously, you know, ask this question to yourself and change your attitude.
And then measure your love.
Exactly. You know, actually, even if there's something wrong, Allah is all forgiving. But now change your attitude.
Exactly.
Now try not to lie. Now try not to, you know, keep secrets. And now try not to go against. Because sometimes your husband is saying something and you try to tell him, oh, I don't care whatever you say. I just want to do whatever I like.
Yeah.
Never go against him. Because the permission of husband is something given more importance in Islam. Indeed, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is all-wise, all-knowing. And whatever he commands has a great philosophy behind it.
Exactly, yeah. Thank you, dear ladies, for staying with us. This is Muslim Lady. We're still talking about the behavior of the queen of all the ladies with her husband and how she treated him so devotedly, so with so much of passion and love and commitment, and she always respected him. I guess this part is finished, the way she treated her husband, and now we come to talk about how she treated her children.
Definitely, yes. So, we have seen how her behavior has been with her husband. And when children come, many women have this, or many men actually come and complain, say that, now since we have kids, my wife has forgotten me.
Yeah, that's very natural.
I will tell you in a couple of discussions how beautifully she has managed, because in one of the episodes you asked me the question how she managed to balance. I don't think we had enough time to explain, but now I think...
Because that's the most difficult part.
Exactly, because now I think I'll be able to explain this one. Well, children are something... If there's a couple, if it has to get 5 stars added, it's children who add that charm, the stars to the family, who complete a family, actually.
The tree of love is actually going to have much more of roots when the children come in.
Exactly. That's how you can put it beautifully, because a literary person is staying in front of me, and that was a beautiful way you can put it. So she had 4 children. She had 2 sons and 2 daughters, and... in the towards the end of her life, she was pregnant with the 5th one. However, that's a different story, how she had a miscarriage and all. But, you know, when it comes to kids, we have a pretext always. We have this excuse. I have 1 kid. How can I manage my husband, my home, my job, my father, my everything?
Yeah.
With just 1 kid. I'm saying, in terms of children, she had a good number of children. In terms of her husband, he was in the worst of the times, in the wars, in the wounded situation.
Seriously, that's very difficult, you know? Even the grandmothers, when they talk about their life, since they had more of children, a greater number of children, when they talk about their relationship with their children and also with their husband, you just feel shocked and so surprised because...
How they managed balance.
Exactly. Because right now, when you see the families, they are just 3. I mean, the couples plus 1 tiny little one, and then they cannot manage at all.
The more they are less, the more they are, you know, disturbed.
Exactly.
Actually scattered, and there's no balance.
How come?
Because they don't... our role model is not Lady Fatima Zahra Sallallahu Alaihi. Now see her way of life. What has been her main focus in the upbringing of her children was spirituality. We said that she was a direct student of Prophet, peace be upon him. She learned each and everything. She had very focused on these verses from Surah Taha, which says that teach your family the prayers, the salat. Also have in Surah Tahrim, all those who have, all the believers, protect your families from the fire. And, you know, she had a very deep understanding of these verses and deep look. So her major part was the spirituality. Now the very important question I'll answer in a very short, was she would definitely give sadaqah. She would give her alms for her children, she would give her charity, she would do everything Prophet commanded. And, you know, we are saying how she balanced. She's playing with Imam Hassan al-Islam. But at the same time, she's respecting Imam Ali. She would recite poems which would say, "Oh Hassan, be like your father."
That's very beautiful.
"Be like your father and hold the rope of truth very firm."
So even in her nursery rhymes, she's just teaching her children to be like their father.
Because we have this excuse, I am managing children. How can I, you know, take care of my husband?
I guess it's all related to priorities. You know, a woman has
how you balance
Then again,
we
come to priority.
Because we were confused how she balanced. Now she's saying, "Oh Hassan, be like your father." Uh-huh. You know, she's not talking to Imam Ali, but she's expressing all love to him.
Exactly.
And at the same time, she's... playing with her son.
Yeah. And speaking to the ladies of this time, I would say that it's true the balance is very much needed, but the balance does not come without prioritizing your important issues.
And without using your intellect.
Exactly, yeah. That's
the
whole point.
So much of it. You use it at so many wasteful things. Please use it at the right place.
Try to have a plan for every single step of your life, and I guess everything is going to go on track. Everything is going to be balanced then. So this was all the time that we have for today. Muslim ladies, it was a pleasure for me to be here with you. Thank you, Sister Zainab. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. May Allah protect you and preserve you with His never-slipping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. Mm-hmm.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
In the limelight.
Britain's economy has faced many challenges in recent years. The withdrawal of the country from the European Union and the expenses caused by the control of the coronavirus pandemic caused the economy to be about 20% smaller than in 2020. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, rejected calls to prevent sharp rises in domestic energy bills for all households in his March budget, meaning millions of Britons will see costs soar by about 40% from April. Instead, Jeremy Hunt will claim the extra support he's giving to the poorest and most vulnerable households, including those on benefits, in what he will describe as a more fairly targeted system of support. Demands for the Treasury to halt a planned rise in the energy price guarantee, the discounted cost of gas and electricity to consumers from £2,500 to £3,000 a year for the average household in the March budget, have been growing in recent weeks, particularly as the whole wholesale cost of energy has been falling. Because an additional £400 of extra government help with energy costs for all households made in monthly payments since October also ends in March, the effective rise for all but those under lowest incomes will be about 40%. Calls for the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, to stop the rise in the energy price guarantee have been led by consumer champion Martin Lewis, founder of the website MoneySavingExpert.com, who has said the move would be an obvious rabbit out of the hat that the Chancellor could afford to pull out of his red box in March. The Labour Party, meanwhile, has also been calling for the rise in the energy price guarantee to be stopped and for the extra cost to the government of doing so to be met through the proceeds of a more punitive windfall tax on the vast profits of energy companies. But Treasury insiders have told The Observer that the move is not under consideration, partly because Treasury receipts from its own windfall tax on energy companies have been less than expected, and because of worries about exposing taxpayers to future market rise. Ruling out the move, a Treasury source said, while gas prices have fallen in recent months, they are still five times higher than the historical average, and can just as easily increase. The source added, if the gas price spikes, the government will need to borrow billions of pounds more, while the energy price guarantee will continue to insulate millions of households from even higher wholesale gas prices. We need to reduce the taxpayer exposure to market volatility. Insulating every household and on an open-ended basis could have major implications for the public finances. Officials said that at the time of the autumn statement last November, the Treasury's own estimate for the proceeds of the windfall tax over 5 years was £55 billion. But because of recent falls in energy prices, this total has fallen by £25 billion and was now anticipated to come in closer to £30 billion. Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves said the prospect of such steep rises for most households was frightening and shameful at a time when energy giants were reaping huge profits. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a report, households in England and Wales will see the largest increase to their water bills in almost 20 years from this April, when they rise to an average of £448 a year. Industry body Water UK said the 7.5% increase would see customers pay around £1.23 per day on average, an increase of 8 pence per day, or an average of £31 more on last year's charges. Consumer groups warned the rise could prove the tipping point for one in five customers already struggling to pay. But Water UK claimed the water bills remained lower in real terms than they were a decade ago and said this year's increase reflected higher energy costs, with water firms using around 2% of the nation's electricity. It announced firms were set to invest a further £70 billion to eliminate harm from storm overflows and increase water supplies by building new reservoirs and national water transfer schemes, claiming that they were acutely aware of the impact of price rises on lower income and vulnerable customers and had recently increased the level of support they offered by more than £200 million. Water UK Director of Policy Stuart Colville said, with an average increase of around 60 pence a week, most customers will again see a below-inflation increase in their water bill. However, we know that any increase is unwelcome, particularly at the moment. The Consumer Council for Water announced regional variations and factors such as whether a customer is metered and how much water they use meant some households could face rises significantly above or below the average. The Consumer Council for Water Chief Executive Emma Clancy said, water is essential for all of us, so no one should be worried about being able to afford their bill. These increases will bring more uncertainty to struggling households at a time when they can't be certain that they will get the help that they need. Emma Clancy added, low-income households need immediate relief and the long-term security of knowing their water bill will be affordable. It is not fair that struggling households face a postcode lottery when it comes to getting help with their water bill. That's why we urgently need a new water affordability scheme that provides consistent support based on people's needs. The website msn.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. The impending recession could leave borrowers struggling to repay their debts, the high street bank Santander UK said as it put aside more cash to protect itself from potential defaults. The UK arm of the Spanish bank said recently that while the outlook for Britain's economy remained uncertain, a recession in 2023 was likely. It said that despite government support for energy bills, rising prices would continue to eat away at disposable income, which could impact lending repayments. The warning was issued alongside the bank's full-year results, which showed the lender put aside £321 million in 2022 to cover potential defaults, compared with the £233 million it released a year earlier as COVID restrictions began to lift. The higher figure was because of the deterioration in the economic environment, including higher interest rates, lower economic growth, and a drop in house prices, which Santander predicts will fall by about 10% to levels not seen since 2021. The bank said these challenges for households and businesses are expected to continue into 2023 and could impact credit quality, referring to the ability of borrowers to repay their loans and mortgages. On Wednesday, Virgin Money set aside £66 million to cover a possible rise in bad debts in the first quarter of this year. However, the Challenger Bank said repayments had been stable so far. Santander's provision for potential defaults weighed on the lender's profits, which rose just 2% to nearly £1.9 billion over the year to December. The flat growth was despite a 12% increase in net interest income to £4.5 billion, as the interest rate rise allowed it to charge more for mortgages and loans. Profits were also subdued by the £421 million it put aside to cover the cost of fraud and scams, as well as a £108 million regulatory fine from the Financial Conduct Authority. In December, the UK regulator issued the bank with a penalty over serious and persistent gaps in its anti-money laundering controls between 2012 and 2017. Santander UK said it was also affected by a marked slowdown in mortgage lending at the end of the year as interest rates increased to 3.5%.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.